Brahma-gyanitya-minanasya jana-jana-slakaya saksu-sundatan-dena tasmai-sri-gave-nama sri-chaitanya-manabhistam-stapitam-dena-bhutale sayam-rupa-kadamayam-dadati-sapandantikam vanchikapatubhascha-gubhasandave-vaja patitanam-pabhinebhyo-vaishnavebhyo-namo-nama. Lord Brahma has approached the Lord in Swetadip, the white island, which is the Vaikuntha planet, the spiritual world within the material world. It is not destroyed when the universe is destroyed, when there's annihilation. This is not destroyed, it's an eternal planet, and the Lord lives there. Brahma approached because the great difficulty the demigods were in. So he evoked the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is the platform on which the Lord will appear, the Sudasattvam, actually pure goodness. But goodness brings strength to the pious and those who are demonic. Those who are controlled by passion, ignorance, become weakened when there is goodness, and vice versa. When there's passion and ignorance on the rise, the devotees, those who are naturally in goodness, Prabhupada once told me that the devotees, their natural consciousness is good. Even though in one sense the devotees are transcendental, beyond the modes of nature, naturally they act in goodness. So he was calling. Lord Brahma, on behalf of the demigods, went to the Swetadvip to offer prayers, to evoke the Lord's presence, to get his help in the fighting with the demoniac forces who were harassing the devas or the demigods. So today we'll begin with Lord Brahma's prayers to the Lord. Lord Brahma said, this is text 26. Lord Brahma said, O Supreme Lord, O changeless, unlimited, supreme truth. So what we'll do is we'll read several verses and then we'll discuss them and read Srila Prabhupada's purports. Segments of Prabhupada's purports. O Supreme Lord, O changeless, unlimited, supreme truth, you are the origin of everything. Being all-pervading, you are in everyone's heart and also in the atom. So this is, he's speaking to Lord Kiradakshaya Vishnu, who is situated in the ocean of milk. You are the origin of everything, being all-pervading. You're in everyone's heart and also in the atom. You have no material qualities. Although you are everywhere, you have no material qualities. You do not touch matter. Indeed, you are inconceivable. This is inconceivable, how the Lord can be in everything, between everything, and yet, and everything is resting upon him. Vistabhyam idam kritsnam ekam senasti tolja God. And yet he has no material qualities. He's not touched by this matter. But this is the transcendental Lord who is inconceivable. Therefore, indeed, you are inconceivable. The mind cannot catch you by speculation. And words fail to describe you. No material word can describe who this Lord exactly is. And therefore, with an ascending path, all we can say is God is great, or he is the creator. Some things on that level, but his transcendental, beyond material qualities, his position as Lord Ram, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, as Krishna, as the Lord of Vaikuntha and Orion, no one can say any positive direct characteristics, because all those only enter within the consciousness through descending means, shastra, and the holy names and the pure devotees, the words of the pure devotees. So words fail to describe you. You are the supreme master of everyone, and therefore you are worshipable for everyone. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. So that omnipresent Lord, he is everywhere. He is all-pervading. Just understand what God is, Prabhupada would say. And therefore, when people foolishly declare, oh, I am God, or we all are God, or there's just a new incarnation that everyone should worship, we should understand what God is before agreeing that this person or that we are God. All-pervading, omnipresent, always everywhere, but not touched by matter, non-material, worshipable by everyone, supreme master of everyone. Are we the supreme master of everyone? Although we may like to be. I remember during the 60s, it really never surfaced after that directly. It's just become really more subtle. We went to the Woodstock concert, the famous Woodstock concert, and on a side stage there was a band playing. And they were literally singing with that crazy rock and roll music. It was crazy and wild. They were singing, you are moving the sun, you are moving the earth. Hardly. You're moving the sun and the earth? Ridiculous. Who would say such a thing except on Woodstock in the 60s? But now people actually, they won't say it so like that. But people think like that. We're all God. But this is what it means to be God. Do we move the sun? Are we the ones making the seasons change? Do we make the plants grow? The fruits come out, the leaves drop, the leaves bud and grow again? Bodies change, give the eye the ability to see. Are we making the breath go in and out in every single living human being? Do we make the hair grow? We don't even know how the hair grows in our own head. But to speak of making the sun and the moon rise and the trains go on time. We don't even know how the hair grows in our own head, why it works like that. Are we consciously doing that, or is that going on by a higher power? And yet people dare to say, I am God, I am the controller. Because, why do people say that? Because if we're God, then we don't have to surrender to that supreme master. You are the supreme master of everyone, therefore you're worshipable for everyone. We don't want to accept that. So therefore, I am moving the sun and the moon. I am making the seasons change. And I am causing my own confusion. That's actually the truth. So therefore, the first prayer ends. We offer our respectful obeisances unto you. He's praying to the Lord. 27. And there's one word that's very important in the 27th verse. The Lord, he's calling, the Lord Brahma is calling the Lord Triyugam. And that will be described. That means he appears in three yugas. And that is the name of Krishna that really indicates Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who comes in the fourth yuga, but in disguise, covered, Chana Avatar. So the 27th verse says, the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly and indirectly knows how everything. He knows, so he's omnipresent from the last verse. And here he's omniscient. He knows everything. He's everywhere and he knows everything. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead directly and indirectly knows how everything, including the living force, mind and intelligence, is working under his control. He knows it directly and indirectly. He's conscious of everything. Just like if we touch our own body, if we give ourselves a pinch, we feel it, the pinch. So that's directly knowing. But also we know what we are doing indirectly through our intelligence and through our eyes and watching it. So when everything is non-different from us, we directly and indirectly are aware of everything. So Krishna is like that. Nothing is separate from him. So he knows everything, directly and indirectly, how the living force, mind, and intelligence is working under his control. He is the illuminator of everything and has no ignorance. Because ignorance means the absence of knowledge. So if he knows everything, he has to have no ignorance, because ignorance would be a spot that he wouldn't be aware of. So that he doesn't have, ignorance and foolishness and stupidity, that he has given to his parts and parcels. So in that sense he has it, because we are not different from him, although we are not identical with him. He is the illuminator of everything and has no ignorance. He gives life, consciousness, awareness. He does not have a material body subject to the reactions of previous activities. And he is free from the ignorance of partiality and materialistic education. I therefore take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who is eternal, all-pervading, and as great as the sky, and who appears with six opulences in three yugas. He is Trigra. He appears with all six opulences in three yugas. Satyatraitan Dwapara. 28. These are the prayers of Lord Brahma to Lord Kiridaksha Vishnu. Now now we're moving to the living entity. In the cycle of material activities, cycle, what shape is the cycle? Circular. Yes, circular. It's round. In the cycle of material activities, the material body resembles the wheel of a mental chariot. So here, it's going to be the living, the material body is going to be compared to a wheel of the mental chariot, isn't it? It is actually just like the a part of the chariot is the wheel. So similarly, a part of our mind, in one sense, is our body, because the body becomes manifest from the mind. Adishtaya manastayam visha upasevate. Based on the mind, the desires that we carry in our mind, we gain a material body. So here is how the material body resembles a wheel. The 10 senses, 5 for working and 5 for gathering knowledge, and the 5 life airs within the body form the 15 spokes of the chariot's wheel. So there are spokes. The 3 modes of material nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, are its center of activities, and the 8 ingredients of nature, earth, water, fire, air, sky, mind, intelligence, and false ego, comprise the rim of the wheel. That's what it runs on. The external material energy moves this wheel like electrical energy. Thus, that's Maya, makes everything work within the body. And Maya dakshena prakriti suyate saracharacharan works under the control of Krishna. Thus, the wheel revolves very quickly around its hub, or central support, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supersoul and the ultimate truth. We offer our respectful obeisances unto him. So that omnipresent Lord, who knows everything, omniscient, is the center of the material, our material existence. He's making the body work, supporting everything. If that support is removed, the whole thing collapses. That's the Supersoul. 29. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in pure goodness, Sudha Sattva, and therefore he is Ekavana, the Omkar, Pranava. So although he's the center, so you might think, well, the center is composed of the same materials, the hub is composed of the same material as the wheel. So in one sense that's true, because Krishna and ourselves are spiritual, like gold is composed, a gold earring is composed of the same material as the gold mine. But yet the gold mine is huge, it's vast. So in that sense, it's quite different. So he is beyond. He is situated in Sudha Sattva, pure goodness. And we are situated in the three modes of material nature. It's the center of our activities, but he is not touched by the three modes of material nature. He is situated on the platform of Vasudev, Sudasattva, Sandini Shakti, internal energy, like that. So he's everywhere, he knows everything. He's the center of our existence, but yet he is on a different level of existence. He is Ekavana, the Omkara, Pranava. Because the Lord is beyond the cosmic manifestation, which is considered to be darkness, he is not visible to material eyes. So we need a different type of eyesight to see him, spiritual eyes. Premanjana Chorita Bhakti Balachena. Pure eyes covered with love. He is not separated from us by time or space. Very interesting. Nonetheless, even though we can't see him, he is not separated from us by time or space. That means that in one instant, we could be with him because he's already there. There's no separation. That's why when Gajendra prayed, immediately the Lord appeared. Says that everywhere. He's not separated from us by time or space, but is present everywhere. Seated on his carrier, Garuda, he is worshipped by means of mystic yogic power by those who have achieved freedom from agitation, whose minds are fixed in yoga, perfectly focused like a lamp in a windless place, like the candle of a flame, perfectly unflickering. This is what the practice of yoga is meant to do. Dhanan, Dhyan, Samadhi. To focus the consciousness fully upon him, perfectly. And then, because he is on a different level of existence, the consciousness of the living entity who focuses in that way, similarly, when it becomes saturated, and by that stage it is saturated with the Lord, he is also on a different level of existence. There is no passion, there is no ignorance, there is no material goodness even, but there's a transcendental bliss that will flow to the yogi who focuses his mind upon Krishna. Let us all, he concludes, Brahma concludes, offer our respectful obeisances unto him. No one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya. So he's everywhere. It's a frustration for the living entity. He's everywhere, not separated from us by time or space. He's there. He's here. But we can't see him due to Maya Javani Kachanam, the curtain of Maya. It's covering not him, but our eyes. So we can't see him. So therefore the next verse explains, no one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya. We can't force this curtain to raise by our power in any way. We just don't have the power to do it. We can't see him by our own power. No one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to enjoy the aim of, to understand the aim of life. And we see this. People are going around just using their life in a carefree manner and not considering really what the purpose of life is and thinking that this is proper. But then, when death approaches them or some painful circumstance approaches them, then they become terrified. But they just spent their whole life. What is the purpose of that life? That knowledge, that insight, that human life has a purpose, is gone from today's culture. It is gone. The purpose of life is to enjoy, everyone thinks. To gain money, power, and even the purpose of religion. Dharma, one practices religion. For artha, to gain wealth. For the purpose of kama,
to fulfill material desires. Even the most religious people think that. So it is a sad state. And the result is confusion. So due to Maya, everyone becomes bewildered and cannot understand the aim of life. And what is the aim of life? To awaken to our actual identity, our relationship with Krishna. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone and who is equally disposed towards all living entities. Let us offer our obeisances unto him. Since our bodies, Lord Brahma is speaking on behalf of the demigods, is made of sattva-gun. What does sattva-gun mean? Goodness, yes. We, the demigods, are internally and externally situated in goodness. All the great saints are also situated in that way. So that's the topmost qualification in the material world, to be in goodness. Therefore, if we cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, what is to be said of those who are most insignificant in their bodily constitutions, being situated in the modes of passion and ignorance? How can they understand the Lord? Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto him. So, we'll read some purports now. There's more verses, but we'll read some purports. These prayers go to the very end of the chapter. Verses 50. So how is it possible for us to understand the Lord? So now, even though he's everywhere, he's omnipresent, he's omnipotent, but because of this, the curtain of Maya, illusion, our eyes are covered. So even the demigods who are pure-hearted in goodness can't understand him. What to speak of? Some of us who may be tinged with the lower modes of material nature. There goes the old confirming sneeze again. Very good. How do you do that? Just at the right time. If Krishna is everywhere, he's also situated within your sneeze, telling you now, sneeze. So the first verse spoke about the Lord's omnipresence. He's everywhere. We'll read some of the purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is not anything of material creation. Everything material must change from one form to another. Is there anything in the material world that doesn't change? For example, from earth to earthen pot, and from earthen pot to earth again. All our creations are temporary, impermanent. So that is a great frustration for everyone, because we long for a very settled, eternal position. We long for that. We try our best to imagine, we try our best to make something permanent and give us some security. Security means permanent well-being. But it's impossible. And then we, in illusion, we imagine that we have created some security, but there's always some nagging doubt in us that this is going to be insufficient. And we're always thinking, but what if this and what if that happens? Actually, there can be no security because everything is changing. All our creations are temporary and permanent. Impermanent. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, however, is eternal. And similarly, the living entities who are parts of him are also eternal. Mamai vangso jivaloke jivabhuta sanatana. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is sanatana, eternal. And the individual living entities are also eternal. The difference is that Krishna or God is the supreme eternal, whereas the individual souls are minute, fragmental eternals. If we examine our consciousness, there is a natural feeling in everyone that we will never die. Everyone has a natural disposition to thinking that way. And it's true on one level. But when we identify with the body and think, oh, we won't die, then that is illusion. But there is not a natural inclination in the living entity to think that he's God. Yes, eternal, but not God, not controller. How could God have gotten himself into such a messed up position, a difficult position? Controlled. The controller can never be controlled. The one who controls, who creates and controls the forces of the world is not under those very same forces. God's hair doesn't turn gray. His body doesn't become wrinkled. Those are the forces that work upon the living entities. There are forces. We are not free. We are being forces means that which forces us to become old, forces the seasons to change, forces our eyesight to weaken, forces the strength to be pulled from our body. Forces. This is the force of Maya. Maya Dakshena Prakriti, under the control of Krishna. But Krishna himself is not under that. So we are not God. So the individual souls are minute fragmental eternals, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Chatragyam Chapimam Vidhi Sava Chatreshu Bharata. Although the Lord is a living being and the individual souls are living beings, the Supreme Lord, unlike the individual soul, is Vibhu, all-pervading, and Ananta, unlimited. The Lord is the cause of everything. The living entities are innumerable, but the Lord is one. No one is greater than him, and no one is equal to him. Thus the Lord is the supreme worshipable object, as understood from the Vedic mantras, Natatsamas Chabhyadikaras Chadrishyate. The Lord is supreme because no one can evaluate him by mental speculation or jugglery of words. So he and Prabhupada gives in the rest of the purport, which we won't read, he talks about the great power of Krishna, that he does everything, but yet he does nothing. He does everything through his energies, just like a wealthy, wealthy, wealthy man is on vacation and he has his secretaries do all the work. They're under his employment and control. So similarly, Krishna never has to do anything, yet he's doing everything. Now in the second verse it describes, in 27 it describes the Lord's omnipotence. Now he is, omniscience, his knowing everything. We'll read from some of Prabhupada's purport. Third paragraph. The Supreme Lord is described, this is just really Prabhupada's just going to explain how the Lord is Triyuga, he's called here. It means he appears in three of the different yugas or ages. The Supreme Lord is described as Triyuga, because although he appeared variously in Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, and Dwapara Yuga, when he appeared in Kali Yuga, he never declared himself the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna Vanam Tusha Krishnam Sango Pastra Parishadam. The Lord appears in Kali Yuga as a devotee. He teaches how to surrender to Krishna. God himself comes, teaches how to live a life of surrender. Thus, although he is Krishna, he chants the Hare Krishna mantra like a devotee. Still, Srimad Bhagavatam recommends Yajnai Sankirtana Praya Yajantihi Samedasa. See, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his complexion is not black like that of Krishna, but is golden. Trisha Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is accompanied by associates like Nityananda, Dvaitakarata, and Shivas. Those who are sufficiently intelligent worship this Supreme Personality of Godhead by performing Sankirtan Jagya. In this incarnation, the Supreme Lord declares himself not to be the Supreme Lord, and therefore he is known as Triyuga. So in text 28, it describes how everything, this whole material circumstance of the body, revolves around the center, its hub, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or the Supersoul. who is the super soul, who Lord Brahma is actually worshipping, is Kiridaksha Vishnu. We'll read Prabhupada's purport. The cycle of repeated birth and death is figuratively described here. It's stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Aparyayam idastvanyam prakriti virime param jivabhutam mahabaho yedam daryate jagat. The entire world is going on because the living entity who is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord is utilizing the material energy. Under the clutches of the material energy, the jivatma is revolving on the wheel of birth and death under the directions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's what it feels like, just spinning round and round and round and round and round. It's disorienting. On the wheel of material life. And the center, the central point, Prabhupada explains, is the super soul. Because he is this, in all the different spinnings in samsara, he stays within our heart. As explained in the Bhagavad Gita, Ishvara Savabhutanam Riddhishe Arjuna Tishtati Brahmayan Savabhutani Yantra Udani Mayaya. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, or Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated as on a machine made of the material energy. The material body of the living entity is a result of the conditioned soul's activities. And because the supporter is the super soul is the true reality. Because any definition of reality that doesn't refer to the support of all the other elements is incomplete. And all the other elements of reality, if defined in terms of that which supports them, the ultimate support of everything, the Ashraya Tattva, then the definitions are accurate, the definitions of everything else. So, and the scientists, the material scientists, their business, practically speaking, is to define everything somehow or another, everything existence, whether it's the air or the universe or the atoms or this or that, define it without any reference to the Supreme Support. And for that, Srila Prabhupada devastatingly criticized them and relentlessly criticized them. Not for their scientific work, but for that particular attitude, atheistical attitude, which so much harms the common people who follow them blindly, have full faith in them. It really hurts their consciousness and turns them into atheists. So for that reason, Prabhupada was relentless in his attacking the scientists. Because they are forgetting to define everything in relationship to the support of everything. And they cannot say what another support is. And yet they refuse, they'll say so many things, but they won't say the word God. They'll say black hole, they'll say chunk, they'll say singularity, they'll say big bang, but they'll never say God. The material body of the living entity is a result of the conditioned soul's activities. And because the supporter is the super soul, the super soul is the true reality. Every one of us, therefore, should offer respectful obeisances to this central reality, that which everything else revolves against. That is the basic point of the Krishna consciousness movement. The Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we all should offer our respectful obeisances into Him. We should acknowledge that we are not God, and that God is, and that reality is not nothing. No, but there is a Supreme Lord, and that He is worthy of our respectful obeisances. We should become devotees of Him. One should not be misguided by the activities of this material world. We should not become entangled, so entangled in Maya, the activities of the material world, with so many pursuits, trivial pursuits, thinking that life is just meant to fill up these spaces between birth and death. No, there's a purpose to life. We shouldn't think it's a material purpose. That is the instruction given here by Lord Brahma. We shouldn't forget the central purpose, the absolute truth. 29 again, that Lord, that absolute truth, who's the center of everything, he's situated, he's not visible to us because he's situated in Sudasattva, on the transcendental platform. And therefore we who are on the gross material platform cannot perceive him. Prabhupada's purport. Sattvam Vishuddham Vasudeva Sabditam. In this material world, the three modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and ignorance, prevail. They rule. Amongst these three, goodness is the platform of knowledge, and passion brings about a mixture of knowledge and ignorance. But the mode of ignorance is full of darkness. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is beyond darkness and passion. He is on the platform where goodness or knowledge is not disturbed by passion and ignorance. That is called the Vasudeva platform. It is on this platform of Vasudeva that Vasudeva or Krishna can appear. So that when there is no tinges, when the heart is not tinged by passion and ignorance, when it is pure, then Krishna can appear in such a pure heart on the Vasudeva platform. The Vasudeva platform, then Vasudeva appears. Thus, Krishna appeared on this planet as the son of Vasudeva. Because the Lord is situated beyond the three modes of material nature, he is unseen by those who are dominated by these three modes. One must therefore become dhira, or undisturbed by the modes of material nature. The process of yoga may be practiced by one who is freed from the agitation of these modes. Therefore, yoga is defined in this way, yoga indriya samyama. As previously explained, we are disturbed by the indriyas, or senses. Moreover, we are agitated by the three modes of material nature, which are imposed upon us by the external energy. In conditioned life, the living entity moves turbulently in the whirlpool of birth and death, or we're on this whirlpool, or on this wheel. The whirlpool of birth and death. But when one is situated on the transcendental platform of Vasudeva Sattva, pure goodness, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who sits on the back of Garuda. Lord Brahma offers his respectful obeisances unto that Lord. The next verse, text 30. We can't see him. He's in pure goodness. He's on the Sudasattva platform, situated on the Vasudeva platform, and we are caught by Maya. And that illusory energy prohibits the living entity from seeing the Lord, and thus he remains unseen by us, unless the Lord himself subdues the unsubduable Maya and lifts the curtain. What's the verse of the Bhagavad Gita that explains this? Daivi eshu gunamayi mama maya dratya maya metan trantite. Yes. Prabhupada's purport. The prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu certainly controls all living entities. So much so that the living entities have forgotten the aim of life. Nate vidu svatigatim hi Vishnu. The living entities have forgotten that the aim of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. The external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. But that is Maya. It plants that dream, the concept, that yes, only if such and such happens, you will be happy in the material world. That is what Maya does. And the devotee starts with the premise that no, we cannot be happy in the material world. Very cynical about this point, about material happiness. Can the fish be happy out of water? No. Can the devotee be happy out of his natural constitutional position of his relationship with Krishna? No. The material world means out of our constitutional position, separated from Krishna. And that which separates us from Krishna is Maya, illusion, thinking that we can be happy outside of Krishna consciousness. The external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. But that is Maya. In other words, it is a dream that is never to be fulfilled. So we all have these little dreams floating in our consciousness. Sometimes we're conscious of them, sometimes we're not. Hopes, fantasies, that only if, then, only if, fill in the blank, only if such and such happens, then I shall be happy in the material world. So, the good news is that that's not true. That's the good news. That we should awaken our actual relationship with Krishna. And then we'll save ourselves so much trouble if we can do that. So much trouble. What to speak of birth and death, even in this life, so much trouble. Such work, hard work and endeavor for what? For that which we're going to lose in time. So much frustration, because like a mirage of water in the desert that lures the animals, the foolish animals, into the desert, we become lured by the mirage of happiness. And then what happens when the animal gets lured into the desert by the illusion of water being present? What happens? Yes, Graham? What happens? He's out in the middle of the desert, and the hot sun beating down upon him, and there's no water. What happens? And not only is he suffering, he's thirsty. And not only is he thirsty, he becomes dehydrated. And then after some time, he dies. That's what happens to the living entity. We become thirsty. With our energy, we push on further into the desert. But we come thirsty, we get more and more thirsty for the satisfaction that was promised. But then we become dehydrated and then we die. That's the fulfillment that Maya actually gives us despite the promises. It is a dream that will never be fulfilled. Thus, every living entity is illusioned by the external energy of the Supreme Lord. That illusory energy is undoubtedly very strong. But she is fully under the control of the transcendental person, who is described in this verse as Paresham, the transcendental Lord. The Lord is not part of the material creation, but is beyond the creation. Therefore, not only does he control the conditioned souls through his external energy, but he also controls the external energy itself. So this is very good news. Because if Krishna so desires, the curtain of illusion will be removed. That means passion and ignorance and even goodness will be removed. And then we can, by his mercy, we will be able to be in his presence. Bhagavad Gita clearly says that the strong material energy controls everyone. And getting out of her control is extremely difficult. The controlling energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and works under his control. The living entities, however, being subdued by the material energy, have forgotten the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the final verse purport that we'll read, the verses about that even the demigods, even though their bodies and consciousness, everything is goodness, still they cannot understand him by their own power. What to speak of us? So the point is coming. We can see it coming that that Brahma is going to bring up the point of surrender at some time. How the living entity is, how is he going to get the favor of the Lord so that the material energy is lifted, the curtain rises. And we can see what's going on. It's going to have to be surrendered to him, becoming devotees. Savadamam Pratyaja, Mami Kamsaranam Bajam, Manmanam, Baba Madbhakto, Madhiji, Mam Namaskuru, it's coming, it must come. So the 31st verse again says that the demigods, or to speak of us, can't understand him by our own power. Purport. Atheists and demons cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he is situated within everyone. For them, the Lord finally appears. The unstoppable, inevitable power comes to everyone, even the atheists and demons. but in the form of death. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Mrityu Savaharastaham. Jews think that they are independent, and therefore they do not care about the supremacy of the Lord. Yet the Lord asserts his supremacy when he overcomes them as death. At the time of death, their attempt to use their so-called scientific knowledge and philosophical speculation to deny the supremacy of the Lord cannot work. Hiranyakashipu, for example, was an exalted representative of the atheistic class of men. He always challenged the existence of God, and thus he became inimical even towards his own son. Everyone was afraid of Hiranyakashipu's atheistic principles. Nonetheless, when Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared in order to kill him, Hiranyakashipu's atheistic principles could not save him. Lord Nrisimhadeva killed Hiranyakashipu and took away all his power, influence, and pride. Atheistic men, however, never understand how everything they create is annihilated. The supersoul is situated within them, but because of the predominance of the mode of passion and ignorance, they cannot understand the supremacy of the Lord. Even the demigods, the devotees who are transcendentally situated or situated on the platform of goodness, are not fully aware of the qualities and position of the Lord. How then can the demons and atheists understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead? It is not possible. Therefore, to gain this understanding, the demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, offer their respectful obeisances to the Lord. Are there any questions or comments at this point? Prashna hai. Toda prashna.
Even though some people don't believe in the Lord, God has accommodated them by giving him an argument.
Yes.
All right, you don't believe in this, but I have made another system for you.
Yes.
Then you go through the yogic process, then you will achieve liberation, and you will eventually come to me also. So, I mean, given all varieties of mentalities, different varieties of mixture.
Yes.
So for everyone, he has given the system.
Yes.
So that's not to be denied that there is no God. But he has accommodated the impersonalist also in the same.
But and it also he's accommodated the atheists who say there is no God.
He has accommodated everyone.
Everyone. No one can escape his accommodations. We are dependent upon him. Like the prison. Even if someone says, I don't care about the law of the government, the government. They accommodate them very nicely in a prison cell.
Yes, accommodated.
Yes, that's his mercy. But it's better, obviously, not to be in the prison. So he gives so many ways to get out. That's the point you made. Thank you. What is he? Someone gets inspired to go one way or another. What makes one person go one way and another person go another way? What makes one person stay in the prison house and say there is no God, and another person say I want to practice yoga, another person say I want to chant Hare Krishna, another person say I want to, oh, so many things, so many different alternatives. What's the difference?
What you're asking.
Oh, what am I asking? I can't remember. It was so long ago. It's too close to the end of the class again.
What makes one person
choose?
Okay. Why do they choose?
So one reason is, just the word why do they choose, there's the element of free will in there. Choosing means, by definition, free will. There's that element in there. Monkey, you're making grimacing. You don't like that answer, that there's any free will. There must be some free will.
Well, I have to say whether it is due to level of their knowledge or due to free will.
Yes, not only free will, but that free will is part in there. Because this is actually explained by Baladeva Vidyabhusan in one of the commentaries in the prayers to the personified Vedas, that unless there was free will, some free will of the living entity, there would be no use to give instructions, to instruct everyone to follow the Vedas or to follow Shastra, because what would be the use of instructing them to do that, because they don't have any choice whether they're going to do it or not. So he says his conclusion is that some free will is there, but that's not sufficient to explain, because we see very clearly, I may decide right now, oh, Krishna consciousness is so nice, from now on I'm choosing to always chant Hare Krishna, not be attracted to anything of the material world. So I'm freely choosing that, but yet I'm not able to do it. So my free will isn't the only point. There are other points too. And that is, there's one way to look at it is from the point of view of knowledge and ignorance, gyan and agyan. Or another way is from punya. According to one's piety accumulated, one will, or karma, pious credits, one will be attracted to one thing or another. So free will is there, and there's different kinds of piety as well. So if one performs good acts, but not spiritual so much, with a spiritual directive, one will acquire some type of material punya or piety. And then there's jnana punya, and then there's bhakti punya, and then there's yoga punya. So then the question comes, of course, we're saying, as everyone knows that we're saying, that this bhakti is the highest. So there are so many different ways and so many different paths, but bhakti is the highest. So why, on what basis do we have such an seeming, is it a sectarian point? That everything must come to bhakti? There are many, many rivers, and they all must lead to the ocean. And why we say that, it's not exactly everything must, because some rivers dry up and some maybe go into another river and some go here and some go there. But ideally, Krishna explains this point in the Bhagavad Gita. This is the practically the purport of the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita. He shows how karma leads to jnana, and jnana leads to yoga, and yoga ultimately, if one is lucky, leads to bhakti. That is the topmost platform of yoga. Yoginam api sarveshan madgitain antaramanam sradavan bhajate yomam sama yukta tamo tama. Topmost of all is the bhakti yoga. And jnana can also comes in that direction, and karma also. So another way to look at punya, or where one goes, is sincerity. So if one is on one part of a path or another, we shouldn't criticize them. This is maybe hidden in the point that you're making, that we shouldn't dismiss them.
Which they do quite strongly.
Yeah. But so there's two ways of looking at that, I think, from my understanding. One is, if you have a really long-term point of view and you see that everyone's on the path, then we shouldn't dismiss like that. But Prabhupada very strongly, at different times he did different things, but sometimes he would criticize every other path, every other religion, every other path. And that's looking at it from a very, very high point of view. So if we're not on that very, very high point of view, we should be careful about imitating such a person who has that high point of view. If you're on top of the mountain, everything else will look small for you. But if you yourself are a mouse or an insect, there may be a huge tree that's so much taller than you, so we have to be humble. But yet, the example that Prabhupada often gave is like an elevator. So if you're on the second floor of the elevator and someone else may be walking up the stairs but on the eighth floor, so you could, from one point of view, one should be humble and say, you're doing much better than me. I'm only on the second floor. And look at you, you're on the eighth floor already. But from another point of view, if you're on the elevator, it's just a matter of time before you reach the top. So that, of course, brings up another point, that if one is on the elevator, one should stay on the elevator and not get off and wander around at this floor and another or another floor. And also, we're not going by our own power, so there's no reason to be proud and look haughtily at someone else in any way. So therefore, devotees, those who are devotees, they're clinging to powers higher than their own, and that's moving them along. So therefore, one of the prime qualifications of a devotee to become a devotee is humility. Trinadapisunichena. Yes?
Can I make a comment?
Yes.
There's a proposition, how we end up in bhakti yoga as opposed to something else, and free will, and timing our previous punya and so on and so forth.
Yes.
I'd like to posit that it's almost like the branches of a tree, there's myriad branches, and you come to a known point, you have a choice, you go left or you go right.
Yes.
And there's your free will decide based on whatever. You go left. Having gone left, you can't then go right, because then you come to another node point and then you make another choice.
Yes.
And I would say we end up on the back of the yoga section of the tree, because we made a series of choices, free will choices, which are based on other choices we made in the past, which force us up that tree. But at each point we have a choice, we can decide, I want to jump around, yeah, I want to jump around. If I jump around, then I'll jump the guru, I won't jump the guru. Yeah, okay, well, I'm never going to Mongolite now, but...
Sound like you should have been a computer programmer. Binary thinking. Okay. But there's another point in that too. There's a point of mercy. That we're at a crossroad and Krishna says, and you know, we say, I think I should go left, and Krishna says, go right. And then he whacks us one time and knocks us to the right. Oh yes, I should go right. And we said, wow, you great choice, great choice. But behind that was Krishna's left hook and push and taking away the alternative. That sometimes happens as well. So it's complicated how much we're choosing, how much Krishna is pushing. So the devotee, he says it's all Krishna's mercy. And Krishna says, no, no, no. It's your bhakti and your free choice. But what the actual situation is somewhere inconceivable. That's my opinion. Yes.
Unimpeachable sources that I can say. And I've heard that if there is God, say Krishna, and if he looks here...
So the unimpeachable sources said, if there is God,
no,
say Krishna?
No, this. Stop, then again, and stop.
Okay.
Yes.
Start again.
Oh, I haven't again.
Okay. Then I'll stop.
I heard from an unimpeachable source, this
yes.
fact,
yes.
which I'm not describing,
yes.
that God, Krishna,
yes.
He has eyes,
yes.
He sees, He's all merciful. And sometimes His vision can fall upon X, Y, Z, and that is His mercy. Isn't it? Sometimes you
but if you yes. say this is an unimpeachable source, then I have to say yes. Because he's unimpeachable. Yes. But there's another point that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. That makes, if you take it from that point of view, and I don't think that's wrong, but if you take it from that point of view that his eye falls on this person, and therefore that person gets mercy, that makes him appear very whimsical, because he's giving this guy something good and this guy gets something bad. Or this is what Vishwanath Thakur says, whimsical, or childish. So he says that God isn't like quite like that, but although I don't, just I'm not disagreeing with you. But what he does, if Krishna is choosing, I'll be merciful to this one and not merciful to that one, and it makes him appear partial. So instead, Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur says he gives that free will. He doesn't act like that himself, but he gives that type of free will to the devotees, to the Madhyam Bhaktis, not to the Uttama Bhaktis even, but to the Madhyam Bhaktis, that if they choose, they can bestow mercy upon one person or choose it. And there's no going beyond that to say, why do they choose? Because it's simply their choice. That's what Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur said, who's also an unimpeachable authority. But I would like to say also, in addition to that, that the devotee, he's carrying Krishna's Kripa Shakti, Krishna's own mercy. So it's not his mercy that he's distributing, his own mercy, he's distributing his own mercy. And where does he get the inspiration to give be merciful to one person and not another person? That, of course, is Krishna. But there's another point that in the Bhagavad Gita it describes, yesham tvantagata papam jananam punya kamanam, that they tend to be merciful, saintly persons tend to be merciful to those who have punya kamanam. So it goes back to that they have a particular piety. So
that's the system which he has set up already. So his hand is there in that also.
Ha.
The system is the punya karma.
So he gives his mercy, but he may do it through others too, and through his devotees. So at this point, all we can say is jai, and offer him our humble obeisances. Okay?
Yes.
Very good. Jai. Let us offer our humble obeisances to him. And her too, Srimati Radharani. That's another point. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.